Journey to the West, Chapter 7.
Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, right after he gets caught, he's brought to the demon slaying platform. Sounds pretty final, doesn't it?
It's meant to be. This is where Heaven deals with its biggest problems. They tie him up to a pillar, and then they try the standard execution stuff. The text is quite graphic.
Chopping, hacking, stabbing.
Exactly. Knives, axes, spears, swords. They threw the whole sharp and pointy arsenal at him.
And not just physical weapons, right? There was more.
Oh, yeah. They brought in the elemental big hitters, too. The fire gods tried to burn him.
And the thunder gods.
Them, too. Blasted him with thunderbolts. Fire, thunder, blades, you name it.
And the result?
Nothing. The source says, due to it, not a single hair on his head was harmed. He just stood there, completely fine.
That's just unreal. Imagine being the great strength ghost king having to report that back to the Jade Emperor.
Right. The Emperor is baffled. How do we deal with this guy?
Which leads to the big why. Why didn't any of that work?
And Laozi steps in with the explanation. After all, they were his pills. He explains that it wasn't just eating the peaches of immortality, drinking the wine, and downing those five gourds of elixirs.
Raw and cooked elixirs, wasn't it?
Right. Inside Wukong's body, something else happened. Laozi says his own internal fire, the Sanmai fire, which is part of his own power, it somehow acted like a forge inside Wukong's belly.
A forge? You mean it cooked everything together?
More than cooked. It forged it, like metal. Turned all those potent ingredients into a diamond body.
A diamond body. Okay. So not just strong, but fundamentally changed.
Exactly. Impervious.
Yeah.
Conventional weapons, heavenly fire, thunder. None of it could touch this newly forged physique. He basically accidentally created a being that Heaven's standard toolkit was useless against. A complete anomaly.
All right, so chopping and burning are off the table. Laozi, the master alchemist, thinks maybe refine him.
That's the logic. If you can't break him, meld him. Maybe get those valuable pills back in the process. So he suggests using his 8-trigram furnace, the Oshi.
Ah, the legendary furnace.
The very same. So they untie the Monkey King, maybe not their smartest move in hindsight, and shove him into the furnace. Now, this furnace isn't just a hot box. It's designed based on the 8 trigrams. Qian, Kan, Jian, Zen, Sun, Li, Kun, Dui. Each section has different properties.
And Wukong, being Wukong, he finds a loophole.
Instantly. He dives into the Sun position.
Which corresponds to wind, right?
Exactly. His thinking is, in where there's wind, the fire won't directly hit him. Clever.
But there's always a but with these things.
But wind stirs up smoke. Loads of it. The source says the smoke blew right into his eyes, made them incredibly sore and red.
Ah, so that's it. The fiery golden eyes. Yeah, it wasn't the fire, it was the smoke.
Precisely. The constant irritation, the smoke searing his eyes for days on end. It gave him, as the text puts it, chronically sore eyes.
But painful eyes that can see through anything, illusions, disguises, quite the trade-off.
The very powerful side effect, born from agony, really.
And he endures this smoky torment for, how long was it?
49 days.
Ah!
A long stretch in a confined, smoky space.
After 7 weeks, Laozi figures, okay, he must be done now. Time to collect the refined essence.
He thinks the time and temperature are perfect.
Yeah.
He opens the lid, expecting maybe some residue, his pills, and instead out pops the Monkey King, rubbing his red, sore eyes, blinking in the light. And he looks mad.
I bet. After 49 days of that.
He doesn't waste a second. He leaps out, sees the furnace.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. He gives it a massive kick, sends the whole thing crashing down.
He kicked over the 8-trigram furnace, Laozi's most prized possession.
Send it tumbling. The symbol of heavenly alchemy just kicked over like a common bucket, and he's just getting started.
What happens then?
He immediately lays into the guards, the furnace attendants, knocks them all flat. The source uses these amazing images, like an epileptic white-browed tiger or a wind-maddened unicorn dragon. Just pure explosive energy.
Did he? Did he actually hit Laozi?
He sure did. Laozi tries to grab him. Wukong shoves him and sends the old sage flying head over heels. Imagine the scene.
The sheer nerve.
Unbelievable. Then he reaches into his ear.
Ah, the staff.
Pulls out the wish-fulfilling golden-banded staff. Gives it a shake, it grows huge, and now he's armed and really dangerous.
And chaos ensues, I assume?
Total chaos.
Bad.
He starts tearing through heaven, attacking anyone in his path, scattering major constellations like the nine luminaries, swatting away the four heavenly kings. Nobody can stop him. He fights his way right towards the center, through the Toming Hall, and ends up right outside the main event, the Ling Xiao Hall.
The Jade Emperor's throne room. He's literally at the gates.
He is. But someone stands in his way, a figure called Wang Lingguan. He's described as an assistant to the sagely king, Yu Sheng, basically the chief security officer for the palace.
So a proper guardian figure.
Exactly. And he holds his ground, blocks Wukong's path with his Dany, his golden whip.
Staff versus whip. How does that go?
It's a fierce fight. The source describes it as a real clash. Wukong's rebellious fury against Wang Lingguan's loyal defense. They're evenly matched for a bit. Neither gaining the upper hand immediately.
Well, Wukong's facing the entire heavenly army soon, isn't he?
Reinforcements arrive fast. The sagely king Yu Sheng summons the Thunder Generals. 36 of them.
36 elite generals surrounding it.
Yep. They encircle him completely. They come at him with everything. Knives, spears, swords, whips, hammers, axes. A storm of weapons.
And Wukong's reaction? Is he finally intimidated?
Not even slightly. The text emphasizes not a flicker of fear.
He just takes them all on.
He does better than that. He adapts. He transforms.
Yeah, me too.
Three heads and six arms. A classic power move.
Oh, okay. So he can fight in all directions at once now.
And he uses his staff brilliantly. He splits it into three. One staff for each pair of arms.
Three staffs, six arms, spinning.
Like a top. The source says, inye, like a spinning wheel. Just this whirlwind of motion, batting away every attack. The Thunder Generals just can't get near him. He's holding off all 36 of them single-handedly. Well, six-handedly.
And the source includes some poetry here, right? About his nature.
It does. And it really drives home his invulnerability. Lines like, Ushiel Huku, can't be burned by fire, can't be drowned by water.
Swords, spears, knives, staffs can't wound him.
Exactly. It reinforces that he's beyond their usual means. The poem also mentions his duality. He can be good or evil, depending on the moment. Judo. It's this mix invulnerable body, unpredictable nature, infinite transformations that makes him impossible for the standard divine soldiers to capture.
They're just outclassed.
So the picture is Monkey King, three heads, six arms, spinning like a demon, holding off heaven's elite guard right outside the emperor's front door. Utter chaos. The celestial administration is in meltdown. They've thrown everything at him, and he's stronger than ever. This finally gets the Jade Emperor properly worried.
Understandably.
He's alarmed and issues an urgent order. Time to call for external help.
Who does he send and where?
He dispatches two officials, Yue Lingguan and Yisheng Zhenjun. Their destination, the Western Heaven.
To see
the Buddha. They're sent to the Lion Monastery to formally request the Buddha called here to intervene.
A direct appeal to the highest power available, essentially.
Pretty much. They arrive, meet the Buddha's attendants, the powerful Vajra warriors and bodhisattvas, and explain the desperate situation. This Monkey King is tearing heaven apart.
What's the Buddha's reaction to this plea from heaven?
He listens calmly, assesses the situation, and understands the need to save the Jade Emperor to restore order. And significantly, he doesn't delegate. He says, all do I, Davian. Basically, okay, I'll go deal with this demon myself. This needs his personal touch.
And then the Buddha arrives. How's that described? Is it this grand entrance?
It's actually striking in its calmness. Mm-hmm. He arrives from the Western Paradise with his disciples, Ananda and Kasyapa. But amidst all the noise, the fighting, the chaos, he just brings this profound quiet.
Huh. So not like rolling in with a bigger army or anything?
Not at all. His first action is just a command. Tells the Thunder Generals, stop fighting. Stand down. Let the great sage come here.
Let him approach. Wow. And Wukong, how does he react to that? He's probably still riding high from his victories.
Oh, completely. He gathers himself, pops back into his normal form, grabs his staff, and just yells out, like, who dare stop my fight? Who are you? He has no clue who he's talking to.
Incredible. So the Buddha identifies himself.
Yes, he introduces himself calmly as Sakyamuni, right, from the Western Paradise of Ultimate Bliss. And then he asks Wukong these really fundamental questions.
Like what?
Basically, where did you come from? When did you gain enlightenment or your powers? And why are you running wild like this?
And Wukong naturally is happy to tell him.
Oh, yeah. launches right into it. Born from stone, Flower Fruit Mountain, trained with the Patriarch, got immortality, mastered the 72 transformations, the Somersault Cloud, the whole resume.
He lays it all out, but then he gets to the point, his actual demand.
Right. He says the human world is just too small for him now. He wants something bigger.
He explicitly says, I want to live in heaven and not just live there.
No, he wants the top job. I want to take the Jade Emperor's place. His exact words. It's just breathtakingly bold.
And he even justifies it, doesn't he, with that saying?
Yeah, the Sheeranian line. The Emperor's seat rotates. Next year, it's my turn. His whole philosophy is boiled down to, we will rule, the strong should rule, so let me rule.
Within the context of this universe where the Jade Emperor's position is based on like eons of cultivation,
right.
How utterly insane is that claim?
It's almost impossible to overstate the audacity. The text makes a point of telling us the Jade Emperor achieved his position through immense effort, 1750 kalpas of cultivation.
And a kalpa is long, right?
It's longer, unimaginably long. Each one is 129,600 years. So you're talking hundreds of millions of years of spiritual development and merit.
Compared to Wukong, who's powerful, sure, but he's basically just arrived on the scene, cosmically speaking.
Exactly. And he just walks with him and says, nice throne. I'm stronger, so it's mine now.
Yeah.
It shows this fundamental gap in understanding.
He gets power through fighting and magic, but he doesn't seem to grasp this other kind of power, the kind based on, I don't know, cosmic order or merit.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the Buddha's reaction, he just laughs, but it's described as cold laugh.
Oof.
He calls Wukong basically just a monkey who happened to gain some power, a monkey spirit. Totally unfit to even think about challenging the Jade Emperor's position earned over all those kalpas.
It's like saying, you learn to punch really hard. That doesn't make you qualified to run the universe.
Pretty much, but Wukong being Wukong.
He doubles down, I bet.
Completely. He dismisses the whole kalpa argument. Says something like, yeah, he's been there a long time, but he should still make way for me. And threatens more chaos if he doesn't get the throne.
Just relentless. So is this when the wager comes up?
Yes. The Buddha asks him, okay, besides being immortal and changing shape, what else are you really good at?
Setting him up.
Totally.
Yeah.
And Wukong walks right into it, boasts about his 72 transformations, his eternal life, and especially that somersault cloud Urd that can cross 108,000 li in one jump.
That's his ace, right? His incredible speed.
It is. So the Buddha makes the bet. Fine. Use that somersault cloud. If you can leap out of the palm of my right hand, just one leap.
Heaven is yours. The Jade Emperor will yield.
But if you can't leap out of my palm, you go back down below and cultivate for a few kalpas yourself before you start talking again.
And Wukong thinks this is hilarious.
He laughs internally. The text says he thinks the Buddha is Shihuri. Incredibly foolish, basically. His cloud goes 108,000 li. The Buddha's palm looks, what, maybe a foot across to him?
He sees it as a sure thing, impossible to lose.
Zero doubt in his mind. So he readily agrees. The Buddha extends his right hand, described like a lotus leaf.
But Wukong just sees a small target.
Yep. Puts away his staff, gathers his energy, takes a mighty leap, lands right in the center of the palm, ready to go.
And off he goes. Does it describe the journey?
It does. He flies like a shot, invisibly fast, like a wind-powered cart. From his point of view, he's crossing unimaginable distances, heading for the absolute edge of everything.
Until he sees something.
Five massive pillars, flesh-red pillars, holding up this canopy of green energy. And he thinks, this must be it. The pillars of heaven, the end of the line.
Right, the edge of the universe, as far as he's concerned.
So to prove he made it, because he's already thinking about rubbing it in the Buddha's face.
But he needs evidence.
Exactly. He plucks out a hair, transforms it into a brush loaded with ink.
Oh, this is classic Wukong.
And right there on the middle pillar, he writes, the great sage equal to heaven was here.
Yeah, just like cosmic graffiti. But he doesn't stop there, does he?
Nope. For good measure, showing a bit of disrespect, he goes over to the base of the first pillar and urinates there.
Oh my goodness. Just adding insult to perceived injury.
Pretty much. Then, completely be satisfied he's won the bet, he does another somersault and zips right back.
Lands back in the Buddha's palm, probably puffing his chest out.
Absolutely. Demands the throne immediately. I went. I came back. Pay up. Tell the Jade Emperor to pack his bags.
And the Buddha's response must be just devastating.
It is. He just looks at him and says, quite calmly, something like, you urine-scented monkey.
Whoa.
You never left my palm.
Imagine hearing that after you know you just flew to the end of creation and back.
Wukong is stunned, flabbergasted. He insists, I did. I went to the edge. I saw the pillars. I even left proof.
He mentions the writing and the other thing.
He definitely mentions the writing as proof. Mm. So the Buddha just says, well then, perhaps you should look down.
At the Buddha's hand.
Yes. Wukong uses his special eyes, his fiery golden eyes, the ones that can see through illusions. And he looks.
And what does he see?
On the Buddha's middle finger, clear as day. The characters. Great sage equal to heaven was here?
No.
And then presumably he follows the smell down to the base of the Buddha's thumb.
Oh no, the smell of monkey urine.
Exactly. It all hits him at once.
His reaction must be priceless.
The text has him exclaiming, how can this be possible? He's completely shattered. He thinks it must be some kind of magic trick, like foresight or something.
He can't accept the reality of it, right. That the pillars were just fingers.
Right. He refuses to believe it, and his immediate reaction, try again. He gathers himself to leap away again.
But the Buddha's not playing anymore.
No. Instantly, the Buddha flips his hand over, palm downwards. He pushes Wukong out of the west gate of heaven.
And as Wukong falls,
the Buddha transforms his fingers. They become the five peaks of a massive mountain range. Metal, wood, water, fire, earth.
Hmm.
The five elements mountain, or Huha.
Which comes crashing down.
Right on top of Wukong, pinning him beneath it, immobilized.
Wow, just like that. The rebellion is over.
Completely. And the assembled gods, the thunder generals, the disciples, they all witness this and just praise the Buddha. Excellent. Well done.
And they kind of sum up why this happened, don't they?
They do. They list his crimes, deceiving heaven, insulting the sacred, stealing the peaches and elixir, disrupting the cosmic order, basically saying, you brought this on yourself through your arrogance. The Buddha was actually thinking, okay, job done, let's head back west.
Ready to go home.
Pretty much. But then messengers arrive from the Jade Emperor, mm-hmm. saying, hold on, please wait.
The top boss himself is coming.
Yes, and the description of his arrival, it's incredibly grand. Phoenix carriages, music, scattered flowers, incense. The works, this isn't just popping by.
Signifies massive importance then.
Totally. And his purpose is very formal. It's all about gratitude. Thanking the Buddha publicly for subduing this demonic evil, as he calls the Monkey King.
Right, a formal acknowledgement.
And he invites the Buddha to stay for a big thank you banquet with... well, everyone.
How does the Buddha take that? I mean, he just saved the day.
His reply is really interesting. Very humble. He accepts, but says something like, oh, how could I have such power? This is all down to the Jade Emperor and the good fortune of all the gods.
So even though he did the deed, he's still acknowledging the hierarchy.
Exactly. Deferring to the Jade Emperor's ultimate authority.
Okay. So the Emperor accepts this deference and then decides to throw this party. How big are we talking?
Huge. The Jade Emperor orders the Thunder Gods, specifically, to go out and invite basically the entire heavenly administration.
Like everyone who's anyone.
Pretty much. The text lists them.
Yeah.
The Sand King, Siyu, Wu Lao, Lu Si, Qi Yuan, Budgie, Chu Yao, Shidu.
Whoa, okay, hold on. That's a lot of titles. For those of us who haven't memorized the Heavenly Phone Book, why is that list so significant? Who are these beings?
Right, good point. So the Sand King, they're the absolute highest trinity in Taoism. Primordial deities, the Siyu are like four major cosmic rulers, the Wu Lao, five ancient immortals tied to elements or directions.
Okay, so top tier.
And it goes down through all these other important groups, councils, planets, stars, thousands of other immortals. Inviting this specific list means this isn't just the emperor saying thanks.
It's like the whole cosmos acknowledging it.
Precisely. It's universal validation. Order is restored, and everyone high up knows it and approves. The text even mentions figures like Neza, the heavenly kings, showing up to personally thank the Buddha.
Wow. So the guest list is cosmic A-list. The preparations must have been insane.
Oh, absolutely. The Jade Emperor orders these major heavenly palaces, opened up the Jade Capital, Golden Gate, Supreme Mystery Treasure Palace, Cave Sun Jade Hall.
Not just your average function rooms, then.
Definitely not. Opening these places signifies this is a sacred, top-level event.
And the food. I bet it wasn't just celestial finger food.
No. The text mentions dragon liver and phoenix marrow.
Seriously? Like actual dragon and phoenix?
Well, in lore, these are more like incredibly potent, rare substances, maybe elixirs, not just, you know, barbecue. Mm. Plus jade liquid, which is heavenly nectar or wine.
Okay.
And... significantly, those Syrah peaches, the very ones from the Queen Mother's garden that the Monkey King caused such chaos over.
Ah, bringing those back. Nice touch. a symbol of the restored order.
Exactly. So everyone's gathering. This massive event needs a name. The immortals all look to the Buddha.
Makes sense. He's the guest of honor, the reason for the party.
And he names it Entiandawi.
Which means?
Leading to calm heaven.
Perfect. Straight to the point.
It really is. It frames the whole thing. Heaven was in turmoil thanks to Sun Wukong. This meeting is the official declaration that things are calm again, orderly, stable.
It underscores just how much disruption the Monkey King actually caused. It wasn't just a little mischief.
No, it shook the foundations. And the text even has a poem saying that Entiandawi was, like, even better than the original Peach Banquet that got ruined.
High praise indeed. So the VIPs keep arriving, bringing gifts.
Yes, and the gifts are significant. The Queen Mother herself shows up with her attendants.
And she mentions her ruined party.
She does, apologizes for the disruption. And her gift is special. Several large peaches, one she picked herself.
Those super peaches.
The very ones. The poem about them says they grant long life, transform the body. Basically the ultimate prize that Monkey coveted. Offering these is a powerful gesture.
Wow. Okay, who else?
Then you get Shouxing, the star of longevity. The text gives this great description of him. Long head, big ears, short body. Very distinctive.
Right. And his gifts are all about longevity, I assume.
Exactly. Spirit fungus, millennium elixir, Pubal Ganoderma, jade lotus root, golden elixir. All the classic immortality boosters.
And why did he come specifically, besides the general invite?
He mentions hearing the rumor that the demon, Monkey, had actually escaped Lao Yun's furnace for a bit.
Oh, right. That moment of panic.
Yeah. So he was extra relieved and grateful the Buddha finally got him secured.
Makes sense. Anyone else notable?
The barefoot immortal also arrives. He brings cross-section pears and fire dates.
Sounds exotic. Even simple fruits from an immortal must be special.
Probably symbolic, yeah. And the Buddha accepts all these gifts graciously. His disciples Ananda and Kasyapa collect everything. The celebration is in full swing, order restored, everyone's happy.
But there's always a but with the Monkey King, isn't there?
Well, yeah, even Kin down. Mid-banquet, a patrolling spirit rushes in. Urgent report.
Don't tell me.
Yep. The great sage, he's managed to push his head out from under the mountain.
You're kidding. After all that, what's the reaction? Panic.
You'd think so, right. But the Buddha, according to the text, is super calm. Just says, she.
Meaning?
No problem. No problem. Or it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Easy for him to say. So what's his no problem solution?
He just reaches into his sleeve, takes out a golden talisman, a teezy, with six characters written on it.
Ooh, the famous seal. What does it say? What are the characters?
The text gives them Om Mani Bayanu.
Okay. What does that mean? Is it like a magic spell?
It's basically a variation of the most famous Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, the six-syllable mantra associated with compassion, Avalokiteshvara. Immense spiritual power. That last character is a bit different, but the core is there.
So it's not just words, it's imbued with power.
Exactly. The Buddha's own power, representing compassionate but absolute containment. It's a spiritual lock, not just physical.
And he gives this to Ananda.
Yes, tells him exactly where to put it. On the very peak of the Five Elements Mountain, right on a square stone there.
And does it work?
Instantly. The text says the mountain immediately takes root, seals up tight. So tight, the Monkey King can barely move, just breathe, wiggle his hands maybe. That's it. Seals for good this time.
Wow. Okay. Definitive. So the party can resume.
Well, the Buddha makes one last arrangement before he actually leaves the scene. An act of maybe harsh compassion or just setting the terms of imprisonment.
What does he do?
He summons the local mountain spirit, the god of that specific mountain, and also the five directions revealing guardians. Kind of like celestial watchmen.
To guard the prisoner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are to live there on the mountain and keep an eye on the monkey.
Okay. And does he get fed or just starve?
This is where it gets really specific.
Yeah.
And pretty brutal. The instructions are explicit.
What are they?
When the Monkey King gets hungry, they are to feed him iron pellets.
Iron pellets.
Yep. And when he gets thirsty, give him melted copper juice.
Melted copper. That sounds awful. Why iron and copper? Is there a meaning behind that specific diet?
That's a really potent image, isn't it? Iron and copper, they're hard, unyielding metals. Things used to make tools, structures, even weapons. Forcing him to eat them could symbolize maybe forcing him to internalize structure, hardness, the very things he fought against.
Like breaking down his wild nature by making him consume rigid elements.
Something like that. It's the total opposite of the heavenly peaches and wine he wanted. It feels like a kind of purification through suffering, a really, really harsh form of it.
Definitely a harsh road. How long is this supposed to last? Forever?
No, not forever. The text is clear on that. It says he stays there until his disaster time is full or his sentence is up, basically.
Huh.
And it hints someone will come eventually to rescue him.
Ah, so there's an end date, even if it's far off.
Right. And the poems included in this part of the text really emphasize this.
What do the poems say?
Well, one crucial line mentions that despite everything, the monkey still has good roots.
Yeah.
Ashan Gumbushwe. His potential for good isn't completely destroyed.
So redemption is still possible, even after all this.
It seems so. Very deep, but still there. And the poems look ahead, explicitly saying he'll eventually be freed by a sacred monk from the Tang dynasty.